This is a Triple J podcast.
When we think about disability and sex and dating, misconceptions are that we don't want to have sex.
Hey, Dee here for the Hookup Podcast, where we talk all things love, sex, dating, and relationships. And, you know, if I'm not chatting to you here on the pod, I'm reading, I'm scrolling, or I'm watching things to try and find people that I think are super interesting and are having important conversations that I think that you'd also really love to hear about. So, over the weekend, I watched an episode on ABC iView all about disability and intimacy and desire, which was hosted by comedian and disability advocate Madeline Stewart, who you might remember Pip actually spoke to about 3 years ago for the Hookup Podcast. Yeah, it was such a great doco. Maddie basically interviewed three people who each had unique disabilities and spoke to them about how they navigate sex, desire, and pleasure, and also some of the stereotypes and misconceived ideas about those living with a disability and their love lives. And honestly, considering 5.5 million Australians live with a disability, which is over 20% of people in Australia, we just don't have this conversation enough. So let's have that chat right now. Madeline, thanks so much for coming in and chatting to me on the Hookup.
Thank you so much for having me, Dee. I'm so excited to be here and to talk about all things sexiness.
Yes.
You know, that intimacy, love, sexiness. We love it.
It's so nice to have you back. I loved seeing you on the TV. I loved, you know, seeing you host. How was that experience for you?
Oh, it was so fun. I've never hosted a television show before, but I was so excited to host this episode, and it was so wonderful to be invited to host as well.
You absolutely nailed it. You did such a good job. And I think it's so important to point out how many people truly live with a disability. And you did that in the episode. Like, you really talked about how, you know, it's one stumble down the staircase or a freak accident. And I think people who are able-bodied can sometimes see people living with disabilities as maybe something that you're just, you know, born with, which is obviously true for some people, right? But for others, it is from an accident. And an example of that is Kyle, who we meet in the doco, who was like this really fit guy who owned a gym, who accidentally broke his neck and then became a quadriplegic. Why was that so important for you to kind of get across in the episode?
It's really important to remember that, like, disability is acquired. And for a lot of people with disability, it is acquired. You spoke about how, like, 20% of Australians have disability. Well, 80% of those people with disability acquire their disability. So when people think about disability, often it's kind of like, oh, it's them, it's not us, or it's poor them, or it's very othering. It's very, we're different, we're not the same. But, like, I think we all need to get on board and understand that it's not that we're different, it's that we're ahead of you in the timeline. Like, every single person will acquire a disability. It's not a threat. It's not like I'm going to come around and push you down the stairs or anything. But I just mean, like, prepare yourself. Like, this is your future. And whether you're going to take these issues seriously or not is dependent on you and how committed you are to your future self and, like, the world you want to live in when you are disabled. So, like, stop thinking about us as, you know, people that are different to you, because we are you and you will be us.
Yeah, hearing you say that, Maddie, really hit home, because you just think about, like, I've been in a car accident. My dad was recently in a motorcycle accident. Like, I've seen friends go through, you know, freak accidents. Like, it is such an important way to frame it, because it's like, this could happen to us at any moment, any day.
And we don't say that to frighten anyone. Like, a lot of disability that's acquired, it can be like a big range of things, like a lovely spectrum. Some have quite intense disabilities, and some are not as much a barrier in their life, but everyone will experience it.
What are the main misconceptions that you notice when it comes to particularly sex and disability?
Oh, there's so many. I think it's wild, because they kind of contradict each other. You know, we can be objects to fetishize, or we can be objects to pity. We can be hypersexual, or we have no sexuality. You know, it's so ridiculous and confusing, these misconceptions, but most of them are very, very incorrect. You know, we are regular human beings just like you. We aren't doing weird stuff. Like, we're just doing normal stuff as you. Like, when we think about disability and sex and dating, misconceptions are that we don't want to have sex, that we don't want to date, that we can't date, that we couldn't possibly understand what love and sexual attraction is, that we can't be trusted to navigate that, that, you know, I think there's a lot of misconceptions even with us getting married, us having children. You know, to be sexual in any way can either be a taboo or completely fetishized. It's really confusing to be a person with disability in the world with these things being said, knowing that the true reality of your lived experience and the experience of your friends are vastly different.
Yeah, we're going to talk a bit more about that and pleasure as well, and, you know, the ways that you can access that, and particularly like accessible sex aids, yeah. Which is a part of the doco. But I do want to talk about dating apps, Maddie, because dating apps can be brutal just in general. But how can disability change the experience of online dating? Because Kyle spoke about how for him, he was like, I'm putting a photo of myself in my chair right at the start in hospital, like owning exactly his, you know, what he physically looks like. How can disability change people's experience on apps?
Well, that's such a big question. I think it's very complex, because on apps it's all based on what you look like and assumptions and about the person, and you kind of have to kind of squish who you are into a couple of photos and a tagline, and you know what I mean? It's advertising in a way. And I think it can be really, really difficult for people with disability. It's kind of like, how much do I disclose? How much do I share? You know, is this safe for me? We have a lot of things to think about, especially around like assault and things like that around dating. It can be dangerous, and that is something that is very much at the front of a lot of people with disabilities' mind, no matter the gender of that person. We know that dating can be dangerous for us. But I think mostly when we're dating online, the biggest issue is, I think, people messaging hate, the amount of abuse. And, you know, Deborah Keenahan spoke to me. We didn't have it in the episode, but Deborah, who features in this episode, is a woman with short stature. And she talks about how when she was on a dating site, it just didn't work for her, like the amount of abuse she got. And I think that's a common experience for people with disability, either online abuse, like written to you through dating sites, or you go on a date with someone who's just awful, or yeah, just don't want to connect with you, that either see you just as a disability, or, you know, I don't know. I don't want to assume what they're thinking, but it can be really confusing, and really you're not quite sure what a person's intention is on these dating sites.
Well, I remember, I think it was either the episode you did with Pip, or because you're a comedian, I think I've seen a lot of your work as well, but you spoke about how you went on a date once from a dating app with a guy, and he basically was in the military or something, and he tried to show you photos of people that he'd like blown up or something. Was it? Like,
oh, you won't believe it. He said, when I sat down, he was like, one arm, like just like that. And I was like, what? And he's like, it's fine. I've seen it before. I've seen worse. And then started to be like, I was in the military. Here's the town before and after. And he'd like, it was horrible. It was horrible. And I was just like, I'm a pacifist, dude. Like, I need to get out of here. Like, this is scary. And it's like, yeah, is it something? Yeah, I don't know why he thought I would be impressed by that.
It's like the assumption of just being like, yeah, well, I can relate to you in this way. Like,
yeah. I love the idea that people want to relate with me and like share the ways that they want to connect with me, but there is a way to do it.
That's absolutely not it. How traumatic. Well, body confidence is a huge part of the doco as well that you talk about and chat to the people that you interview. I can imagine that, you know, disability can change your relationship to your body in ways people often don't think about. What did you learn about body confidence?
Body positivity is complex for everyone. When I was young, I was really frightened about having one arm. I wasn't sure if people would like me. And this was when I was starting primary school. And I was scared that kids would tease me, right? And then my brother sat me down and we watched Star Wars together, and Luke lost his arm and he got a prosthetic arm. And I had a prosthetic arm too. And it was chunky. It was the 90s, you know. So I suddenly, my brother was like, you're not weird. You're a Jedi. And so the rest of my life, I've never really been uncomfortable with having one arm because I'm a Jedi, you know, and if Luke can blow up the Death Star and restore peace to the galaxy with one arm, I can do this. I can go on a date. I can go to school. I can, you know, I could do whatever I want, really. And that's something that I've always held with me. And so that was like the beginning of this body confidence. It's like accepting what I have and being proud of it. And I went on to being in high school where everyone wanted orange skin. It was 2010 and like hair straightener, you know, your hair was so straight and
I remember,
all your eyeliner.
I remember the fringe.
Oh, yeah. So like I was trying to do all these things and I came to a realization that no matter what I did, I would always be disabled. And I think the part of me wanted to do those things so that people would like me. If I could, you know, have straightened hair, if I could have look the way that other girls did, that maybe I would be accepted despite my disability. And then when I got older and I started having friends with disability and these wonderful, powerful disability advocates that became more educated, I realized that I'm not beautiful despite my disability and I'm not proud of my body despite my disability. I'm all one and this is who I am and I will nurture and love me because there's only one of me and there's only one person that looks like me and that is my beautiful body and that is my body confidence. And that wavers, it wavers day to day, let's be real, but everyone's does. And I think it's important to listen and change the narrative in your mind and the way that you view yourself. That is powerful because you are who you hear in your head and that can be the loudest voice if you let it.
Oh, I think that anyone listening, whether they are able-bodied or not, like anyone listening is going to really be moved by those words, yeah. Maddie. That's so important for all of us to feel.
Change the narrative.
100%. 100%. I don't know why we all walk around saying such, you know, awful things about ourselves to ourselves. Mm. When it comes to like pleasure though, like obviously this whole episode was really focused on sex and desire and pleasure.
Yeah.
Was there anything like new that you learned from chatting to everyone?
Ooh, girl, I learned so many new things. Some of them I can say on air, some of them I can't. I got a lot of tips. I would say something that I learned generally is that when we think of sex holistically, not just, you know, the act of having sex, when we think of it as connection, touch, like the humanity of it all, it can be really sexy and it can be so fulfilling. And you see the difference in the relationships of people who invest holistically in their partner and this intimate experience. I mean, I'm not yucking anyone's yum. There is a time and a place just to like wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. But there's also like wonderful joy that can come from like this intimacy. Something else that I learned and that I've observed quite a lot, something that joins all three couples together is that open communication. A lot of people with disability talk very openly about what they like, what they don't like, what they need, how they're feeling. That we check in on each other. And that's just not even in the bedroom. That's just life. That's how we are. So can you imagine weaponizing that in the bedroom? Could you imagine being with a partner being like, I'm feeling like this. What are you enjoying? Like, you're not going to feel nervous. You're not going to feel shy. There's something about dating with disability and opening that communication that can be really harnessed and can be really sexy and gorgeous. And I think that is a lesson that non-disabled people can learn from us. If you want a sexy little tip, communication is sexy and you can communicate in very flirty ways, you know, to share what you like, what you don't like. But also I found that dignity and respect, I think, is at the core of all the good relationships, and that's a good sex tip. But if we're going to go sex toys, whew, there are some amazing sex toy company, may I say.
Well, because a massive part of the episode was that Kyle was sharing his accessible sex aids, right? Like he basically said in the act of sex that he felt very submissive and everyone did things to him, which he was like, you know, sounds great sometimes. But for him, sex was more about versatility. So being able to have all of these aids where he could actually fuck someone else and he could move their body to him.
Yeah.
Talk us through about some of these like toys and these aids.
Okay. This is where I got very excited. I was like, this is my dream day, going over to your friend's house and being like, show me all your dillies, you know? is that what you guys do on a Sunday?
No, me too, babe. Me too. I'm always like, show me a drawer. What's in
yeah,
it?
Yeah, like, what's
what are
good?
You? What are you using?
Yeah. So the thing is about the disabled community is like we're very innovative and we adapt things and incredible. Like it's fantastic. Like we collectively can solve things and we're used to solving things without funding and now we're back there again. So we're back to the analog days of finding what works and adapting things. But having said that, like that's how with Kyle, we said he would use his wheelchair sling and then use like a little harness to pull someone to him. So he found he has a lot of strength in his arms that he could pull. So it's kind of figuring out what you can do and how you can manipulate the things around you to help you have sex in a easier way, I suppose. You don't have to spend big money on that. He showed me all sorts of things that you could just buy at Bunnings, you know. So I think the sexual aids, get crafty with it, guys.
Well, like, this is the thing, like, yeah. Maddie, how we were talking about before, how these misconceptions and ideas that people have and the stereotypes that they have of people who are living with a disability that might, you know, physically be something you see and just assuming like, oh, they're not, like, they don't have sex or just thinking that they don't design, don't have pleasure and stuff. You actually are doing sex the best because you've got the aids, you've got the toys, you're being creative and you're having really important conversations and you're talking the whole time.
Yeah.
And actually having that level of depth and intimacy, which is just, I think it's so important that people realize that and like break those stereotypes.
Mm. And when I say this, I'm not even talking about like raunchy sex. I'm talking about like you can have the most vanilla sex, no matter what you're into, like having better communication and getting more innovative with it is really fun, no matter what.
You spoke about funding cuts, and this was something that, you know, was mentioned in the doco around the NDIS no longer allowing people who are part of the program to access sex workers. And Kyle spoke about this being really important for him, especially when he first acquired his injury. How has these changes impacted people when it comes to being able to access, you know, even just sex therapy or access to being able to like, pay for someone?
Exactly. So we filmed this episode last year. This was before all of these major NDIS cuts that have happened. So if it does sound a little frivolous that we're specifically talking about sex support, it was filmed before these were announced. But there are cuts across the board happening, and these cuts drastically prevent people with disability to access things that make us human, that gives us meaning and autonomy over our lives. And when people talked about sex work, taking yourself back to last year, when people were talking about sex work and it had been cut, I totally understand that how it like wouldn't pass the pub test. Isn't that how they always say it in politics? Oh, it doesn't pass the pub test. Sure, if you walk into a pub and you say, hey, I think that the government should pay for sex work, of course the pub's going to say no. But if you come in there and you're like, hey, these are the reality of people with disability who aren't being able to explore their own sexuality on their own or with others, like a sex worker can help them. Yeah, maybe that would pass the pub test. If you said to a guy, you can't touch yourself for the rest of your life, would you want a sex worker to come and help you? Of course, they would say yes, that would pass the pub test, I feel. I feel like sometimes people misunderstand exactly what we're talking about and exactly what it's going to be used for. They just hear sex work and NDIS and they're thinking these people with disabilities are just getting their rocks off on my tax, you know, taxpayer dollar. Yeah, yeah. I get it. I get the confusion and the frustration. But, you know, very few people with disability were accessing this. Mm. It cost the NDIS like very, very little and very few people were requiring it. The things that they were using that funding for was like Kyle getting sex aids to help him with his rehabilitation. You know, he lost his ability to move a lot of his body and he was trying to explore what could be possible for him in a safe way. I spoke to you about how like we get a lot of high rates of abuse with people with disability and sex workers are safe. They're professionals that can help you navigate this new chapter of your life. And even people have used this funding for a support worker to come and help you, you know, get into position in the bed and then leave the room. And they're just on call if you need support. You know, there have been stories of this before the NDIS, friends, neighbours, family. I'm sorry, but if you want to hook up with your boyfriend, you kind of don't want your mum and dad in the room helping you unclasp your bra.
Yeah.
Like, come on, this is what we're talking about. And I think if people understood this context and understood how the money was actually used, it would pass the pub test.
A really interesting perspective that I had never really thought of or heard of about, spoken about before, was Kyle mentioning how it was hard not to fall for your support worker. For him, this was kind of his experience when you're so deprived of physical touch. Sometimes that line is blurred when someone is constantly touching you for support, you know, helping you go to the toilet, helping massage your legs, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was such an interesting perspective. Can you tell us a little bit more about this?
Yeah, this is this can be common. I've heard this before, a few people with disability getting little crushes on their support workers. I would like to say that this isn't something that happens all the time. I'm not saying every disabled person wants to shag their, you know, support worker. And that's not what we're saying. We're just saying that sometimes it can be a confusing emotional state. I think to explore your sexuality is a really important part of being human, whether you're doing it yourself, or whether you're doing it with others, or whether you're doing it with a lovely, fun device. It's really important to have that expression. And when you're denied that, and not only sexual expression, but touch, physical touch, often people with disability, depending on what it is, are touched only by doctors and by medical practitioners. No hugs, no intimacy like that. And it can become a bit confusing because your brain and your body is a very complex, you know, big computer, really. And so then when someone's touching you and you're deprived of physical contact, of course, sometimes your brain's going to be like, oh, is this something different? Are they into me?
Mm.
Like, it can be a confusing signal for your brain. It's really important that people with disability have the systems and the ability to explore that part of them. Deborah Keenahan, who's in this episode, she has this wonderful line where she says something along the lines of, to deny someone that sexual expression, that important part of their sexuality, is to deny them their humanity. I'm not saying that everyone.
So beautiful.
Yeah, I'm not saying we have a right to sexual expression. No, it's consent. It's consensual. But like, we have to express our sexuality. That's part of our humanity. And, you know, whether you're sexual or asexual, you know, whatever floats your boat, like, our sexual part of us is an important part of us to honor, and that's human. And to deny it, it does weird things to humans to do that.
Yeah, I can imagine, you know, people listening who might be living with a disability hearing this conversation, what kind of resources or support, we can put them in the notes, but what's your advice for them?
There are lots of resources to support people with disability. So many. If you're a woman with disability, Women with Disability Australia, if you'd like to know more about like sex work and how to navigate that, there's Touching Base. There is so many networks and companies that support people with disability. Reach out, you know, like, this is hard for people with disability to navigate, but it's not the whole story. You know, there is so much joy. There is so much wonderful, happy experiences that come with disability that people don't talk about enough. The joy, the love, the connection, the intimacy. And things can seem really, really dark in times, and they are, but it's not the whole disabled experience. We are not just sad victims of our bodies or whatever. We are powerful people, and we're struggling against a system that isn't supporting us, and we need help. We need help from non-disabled people. If you're non-disabled and you want to be an ally, you know, educate, be kind, and don't add to the barriers that we face every day. I think, yeah, that's my advice to all.
I love it. It's so beautifully said, Maddie. And what about your advice? What advice would you give to able-bodied people who want to date someone with a disability but are worried about saying the wrong thing?
Doll. Can I tell you a very fun fact about disability?
Yes.
So, as you know, 20% of Australians have disability, but of that, 80 to 90% of people with disability have invisible disabilities. Chances are you've already dated someone with disability, so don't get in your head as much about it. You probably know heaps of people with disability. You're probably related to them. You could be a disabled person yourself and you just don't know. So I would say my advice to you is treat us like everybody else. Have open communication. Disabled people find that very sexy. If you want to say, hey, I'm really excited to go on this date with you, but I'm not quite sure what the best language is or how to be respectful or like, you know, how do I meet your access requirements? How can I help make this date enjoyable for you? See what I mean? Open communication. We love it when you ask, but ask respectfully, ask kindly. I would say maybe wait till the second or third date to ask why the person is disabled or what happened to them. I think during those first three dates, they'll probably tell you themselves if they feel comfortable with you. I think good luck. Go from there. I think giddy up. You're going to have a great time. Yeah. And my friends with disability, don't be so shy. Give it a little go. Have some faith and patience and let's communicate and work together. I think, yeah, let's do it.
What do you hope, Madeline, that people take away from watching the show?
I made this show because I wanted to change the narrative, to have a rebuttal to a lot of the representation that people with disability have in the media, especially around disability and sex. I just hope people watch it. I hope people listen. And I hope that you can understand that this is a story about humanity, not about disability. It's about dignity and the human experience and that we are all one. And we are the same and we are all here just to love and love each other.
Well, I hope I get to watch many more episodes of just anything with you on the TV, Maddie, because I just loved you and I loved your pink hair.
Thanks, doll.
You just had such a great energy. And like as a comedian as well, like I just think, like you said, like it's nice to have a bit of like humor and lightness sometimes with
100%.
Some really heavy, which are important topics to have. But like just, yeah, you were a breath of fresh air and sunshine on the screen. So
thank you.
Fingers crossed.
Good luck, everybody, on your dating journeys. I hope you're non-disabled people. Take a chance. Come on, get on the ride. Give us disabled people a go. We'll show you a great time. And then people with disability, I hope you have a great time out there dating, however you do it. Be kind to yourself. Be kind to others, everybody.
Oh, love it, Maddie. And where can people find you on socials and online?
You can check out my website, madelinestewart.com. That's where you can find all my work and you can contact me. You can follow me on Instagram. It's _Madeline_Stewart. I'm there. So come over. Don't be a stranger. Say hi. Give me a follow. Send me a message.
Absolutely. And we'll add that all into the show notes as well. Thank you so much, Maddie.
Thank you.